Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back in December, the Senate Judiciary Committee convened for what seemed at first like a totally normal committee hearing.
Meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee will come to order. Today's the 14th.
They were there to consider judicial nominees from President Biden, five of them in all, including the nomination of a lawyer who could be the first Muslim circuit court judge in the country.
Thank you, Senator Young, Senator Booker.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I am really excited right now. And for all
this hearing began, like a lot of these hearings do, with an over-the-top introduction from a senator. In this case, New Jersey's Cory Booker. He made a moral case for Adil Mungy.
It's not often that I have people from such diverse communities, from Catholic leaders to Sikh leaders, who will testify to the important role that he has played amidst his private career in advancing the cause in our country of religious liberty and religious freedom.
But then, like a lot of these hearings do, this one took a turn.
Do you believe that Zionist settler colonialism was a provocation that justified Hamas's atrocity against Jews in Israel?
Senator, thank you for an opportunity to address that. Let me be very...
Republicans began trying to paint Mungy as an anti-Israel, pro-terrorism radical.
Do you believe that Jews are colonial settlers in Israel?
First, it was Senator Tom Cotton who asked how Mungy felt about Jewish settlers in Israel.
Ms. Berner, this is a simple yes or no question. Are Jews in Israel colonial settlers?
Senator, I don't feel qualified to opine on that because it's not a region whose history I've studied or where I'm from.
Then it was Senator Ted Cruz pressing Mungy to denounce Hamas and support the U.S. response to 9/11.
Senator, I don't think anyone can feel more strongly about what happened on 9/11 than someone who was there, who saw with their own eyes smoke billowing from their towers.
But you won't condemn this.
I don't let him complete his answer, would you? Your time
he's filibustering and not answering questions, and so I'm going to ask him to answer the question I ask instead of giving a speech on a different...
Mungy is a corporate lawyer. None of this is directly related to anything he's been, you know, day-to-day focused on in his career.
Reuters' Nate Raymond, who covers the federal judiciary, was watching all this play out. He says, honestly, he's used to these kinds of theatrics.
I've seen people be called communists off of stuff that they wrote in law school, you know, randomly. It can feel sometimes just like sometimes the hearings can be focused on things that are not core to the person. You know what I mean?
But it struck me watching that Mungy did pretty well with this moment. He didn't rise to the bait. He seemed to have like calm, cool, and collected answers. Did that strike you too? You've watched more of these than I have.
I'll be honest, that day, like, I was juggling other news and I didn't even write on that hearing because when I heard the attacks, while they were very vocal and very loud, they just sort of did seem similar to others. But, you know, it has gone in a way different direction because it something stuck with that.
What stuck was the idea that Mungy was somehow unfit for office, which for Nate was kind of wild.
Mungy, when he was nominated, he appeared alongside a different nominee who I would have thought on paper would be more controversial. It was Nicole Bernard to the Fourth Circuit, who, you know, was the, you know, top lawyer at, you know, one of the major labor unions.
She worked with Planned Parenthood.
She worked at Planned Parenthood. Like, the minute she got nominated, I was like, wow, that's quite the resume. Like,
she was confirmed just a few days ago.
Yeah, she was just confirmed a few days ago, right? And that's why I bring her up as just sort of the wildly different path that these have gone.
Has Monkey been confirmed?
No, he's at risk of not. At this point, he's at risk of his nomination failing.
Today on the show, why Republican smears on a Muslim judicial nominee seem to be sticking. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Who is Adil Mungie? Can you tell me about him and his career?
Sure. I mean, Adil Mungie, he was born in Pakistan and he's a resident in New Jersey, but he's practiced for years at the sort of prominent New York firm called Patterson Belknap.
He has like all the credentials when I looked at him. He'd been to Oxford. He'd been to Harvard.
Yes. He's very highly educated. He's, you know, a prominent trial lawyer within his firm. He was behind a multi-billion dollar verdict, you know, in a trade secrets case, you know. On the side, he does pro bono work. You know, he tried a case for the estate of an inmate who died in New York jail. And there was a case involving permits for mosques in New Jersey that he also handled. But his day-to-day is the sort of corporate litigation work.
How much is his Muslim identity part of his work?
I would say it's a little bit reflective in some of his pro bono work. You know, like I mentioned, he represented some Muslim groups in New Jersey in lawsuits over permits for to build some mosques that were denied. I know he had filed an amicus brief at one point for the Muslim Bar Association of New York. But, you know, I would say at the core, on the day-to-day, it's not the main thing, right? Like, because the main thing for him is, you know, like any lawyer at these big law firms, is to represent just companies in litigation.
So tell me about the position Mungie's been nominated for. Like, why should I care who's sitting on a circuit court of appeals?
Sure. So the big bulk of judicial nominations that a president makes are to these lower courts. You know, there are district courts, which are the trial courts, and there are circuit courts, which are the federal appeals courts. And so, you know, they all sort of hear appeals from a group of states, each one. In Mungie's case, he's been nominated to the Third Circuit, which hears appeals out of Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey.
And these courts are like where law is made in some ways, right? Because they decide what counts.
Right. You know, I mean, the Supreme Court ultimately has the final say, but, you know, they take up a tiny number of cases every year, right? Like, whereas the federal appeals courts have to hear everything. And at the end of the day, for a large chunk of law, that is where the case law is being shaped and where a lot of major decisions are being made, you know, before they get to the Supreme Court, right? Like, I mean, there's lawsuits right now over, you know, the Third Circuit, for example, just heard arguments over Delaware's assault weapons ban. You know, I'm sure someday the Supreme Court will take up assault weapon bans, but right now it hasn't.
This specific court, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, when I was reading your reporting on it, it was really interesting to me because this court seems important. It's got 7 conservatives and 6 liberals right now and 1 vacant seat.
Yeah, he's nominated to that vacant seat, right?
So his appointment matters. Like, who gets this seat really does matter.
It is a very closely divided federal appeals court. And so if Mungie is confirmed, it's a 7-7 court.
So when did it become clear that Republicans were going to fight against Adil Mungie's appointment? Or is this just the way it goes? Like, it's like, obviously they're going to fight it.
There's a little bit of course they're going to fight it. There are some judicial nominations that the Republicans don't fight, you know, particularly if at the trial court level, there have been some where the White House has increasingly sort of cut deals with Republicans from certain states to get nominations that those Republicans will back. But for the most part, for the vast majority, most of the Republican Party has been voting against most of Biden's judicial nominations.
It does seem like the conservative movement was targeting Mungie, though.
Oh, he was absolutely targeted. And like the Judicial Crisis Network, which is this very conservative legal group, they started running ads.
President Biden wants to remake the courts with the most extreme judges he can find. But anti-Semite Adil Mungie might be the worst of all. Mungie served on the advisory board of an extremist organization that teaches students to hate Israel, to hate America, and to support global terrorism.
Mungie, can we talk about the ads for a second? Because the ads are pretty intense. They use footage of planes crashing into the World Trade Center to somehow connect that to Mungie. They seem straight up Islamophobic to me. Like, what are they saying is wrong with him as a potential judge?
I mean, this whole line of attack that's been based around 9/11 and the war in Israel, I mean, it all, the White House and Democrats say they would agree with your assessment that it's Islamophobic, 100%. You know, and when Senator Cory Booker will, you know, he's the main Democrat sort of backing Mungie's nomination. He's like, listen, none of these attacks have anything to do with anything Mungie's ever said, anything he's ever written. There are all these very loose sort of associations that are being used and sort of spun in this way to create this sort of line of attack.
Are the criticisms of Mungie legitimate? Like, we should note that major Jewish organizations, including the Anti-Defamation League, have made statements in support of Mungie. So while Republicans are raising this issue of, is Mungie supporting Israel enough? You know, does Mungie support terrorists? Major groups have come forward and said, we support him.
Yes, and, you know, when Mungie himself was before the Senate Judiciary Committee, he condemned in the strongest words possible, you know, the attack by Hamas in Israel. You know, I think did the best he could in that setting to sort of really distance himself from any of these sort of attack lines that were trying to define who he was in a way that didn't fit with who he actually is. But what I do know is there are some Democrats who are starting to peel off. And if he's not confirmed and this nomination fails, then either A, the White House is going to need to make some very quick decisions because, you know, if they want to get this done before the election and find someone else to nominate, or B, it's going to potentially stay vacant. And, you know, if Biden lost the White House, then this would be a vacancy that Trump could fill.
When we come back, why Democrats seem to be changing their minds about Adil Mungie.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Have judicial confirmation hearings and confirmation processes always been this partisan? Like, I know that they can take a while, weeks, months, years, but this isn't just dragging out. This is like kind of getting down in the dirt.
You know, it's been ratcheting up for years now. It started a little during Bush's tenure, then it got more during Obama's, and then during Trump's, and now we're here. And I would say, some of that has to do with strategies that Mitch McConnell has sort of pushed a little bit on this, you know, where during the Obama years, when Republicans had control of the Senate, it wasn't just like Merrick Garland's nomination to the Supreme Court that got derailed, right? It was that they held open a lot of seats in the lower courts, you know, on the off chance Trump would win the White House, which he did. And when Trump came in, then there was a bunch of vacancies like throughout the judiciary that he was immediately able to start nominating judges for, you know. And so by the end of Trump's 4 years, Trump had secured Senate confirmation of 234 judicial nominees. And so then the court itself, you know, the judiciary itself, you would find is a lot more conservative than it was before Trump was in the White House.
Because of this like spurt of like judgeships being filled.
Yes. And so then when you get to the Biden administration, there is this push to try to bring balance to the judiciary.
But has Biden matched Trump's sort of aggression with judges? I've heard both things. I've heard that, yes, he's pushed a lot of people forward. And I've heard also it's not enough.
100% on the pushing. So as of last week, he's confirmed 190 judicial nominees, you know, compared to, like I say, Trump's 234. And he's got other nominees pending. So he's close, right? Like, I mean, there you can see sort of a window, you know, a chance to maybe match Trump's numbers.
Well, to bring it back to Mungie, you're talking about how Biden is trying to kind of ramp up and, you know, meet the same number of judges that Trump confirmed. And, you know, obviously this is his final, the final year of his first term. I look at a situation like Mungie where you've said his nomination is in peril. And it seems to me like the Biden administration has two not great choices. Like, you can leave the nomination as it is and like see if you can get it through somehow. And then you run the risk of maybe the seat being open for a very long time and open in a new administration. Or you can bow to what seems to be really toxic criticism from Republicans and nominate someone new for the seat. Neither of those seem like a perfect option here.
No, I don't think the White House likes any of what's playing out here. I mean, I think there is a principle that the White House would like to stick to. I mean, they have been super vocal, like more so than I think the White House has been on any sort of line of attack against these lower court nominees, you know, in defense of Mungie against these sort of attacks that it, you know, they've been on record. The White House itself has, you know, repeatedly called these Islamophobic attacks. But on the flip side, there is just the math, right, where it's a 51-49 Senate. And at this point, we have two Democrats that have said, as things stand, they would vote against Mungie.
The first Democrat holding up Mungie's nomination is Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada. Mungie is an advisory board member for an organization called the Alliance of Families for Justice. Masto says that group has, quote, advocated for the release of individuals convicted of killing police officers. And so Mungie does not get her vote. the other Democrat opposing him, is perhaps a more familiar Democratic spoiler, Joe Manchin. Manchin has been quietly voting against some Biden appointees since last year. Last week, he explained why.
He's decided that he is going to vote against any of Biden's judicial nominees that can't get at least one Republican on board.
He called it his own little personal filibuster.
His own little personal filibuster. And so I'm not 100% sure off of that statement if you can't get Manchin back in theory, like hypothetically, if you could find a Republican. The problem is like finding a Republican. And I think at this point, the focus is on Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. You know, she's very independent minded, generally speaking. That said, you know, if your hopes are flipping just Lisa Murkowski, right, then the path is super narrow at this point, because if she is a no, then that's probably the ball game.
Yeah. So what happens now? Like, can Monkey just hang in there as long as the Biden administration is willing to keep him on deck?
I think that's right.
Is there a cost to doing that?
For Monkey, I mean, I think for any judicial nomination or nominee would tell you that it is hard to be sort of left out there, just sort of floating for months on end. You see some nominees bow out at a certain point, just because they get tired of it and the toll it takes on their families and themselves personally. I mean, for the White House, there is, like I say, there's the risk at a certain point that regardless of the merits of these attacks, if they can't get them confirmed in an election year and Biden loses the White House, then this might be a vacancy that stays open for a Trump White House would be the risk. But if you didn't want to risk it, then I imagine there would be some tough conversations to be had if you wanted to withdraw the nomination and put forward someone else quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta wonder what happened here. Like, how did the Democrats lose enough votes to put Monkey in peril? How did we get this far?
I mean, I still am mystified of how this one, as opposed to some of the others, is the one that gained traction. Because I've heard attacks like this against other Biden judicial nominees. They haven't necessarily stuck, really. I mean, Biden's had a couple nominees that have failed here and there. But a lot of these other ones, you know, when they fail, it's for very random reasons, you know, like it's like one senator from a home state decides to oppose. There was another judge changed his mind about retiring, and so suddenly the vacancy disappeared, you know. So Monkey has become this whole different universe of how a nominee potentially is going to fail, you know, where it has become this very partisan sort of line of attack that, you know, he and his supporters would say has nothing to do with who he is being what's going to derail him, you know, if that is how this goes.
If you were a betting man, how likely do you think it's going to be that we're going to see Adil Mungi become a federal judge?
I think the path is slim. It's not shut down 100%, but it's narrowing with each news cycle.
Nate Raymond, I'm really grateful for your time and your reporting. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. It's great.
Nate Raymond reports on the federal judiciary and litigation for Reuters. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Alana Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.